Hey everybody, what is up? It's Antonio. Welcome to season two, episode two of Teach Play Disc Golf, sponsored by OTB Discs, Squatch Disc Golf, Putt Confidently, and EA Sports Sax. I am so excited to have you guys with me today on the show. I'm so excited because we have a very special guest. We have Kevin Parsons from Putt Confidently on the show. Kevin, how are you doing, man?
Doing good, man. We just finished up the beginner part, the members only part. Yeah. So shout out to all of you guys that are doing that and supporting Antonio and supporting Teach Play Disc Golf. So yeah, really stoked to be here. Doing good, you know, rainy Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, rainy day as well. No disc golf today, but this is a nice way to get my disc golf fix in, you know, awesome, without actually having to play. So thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Of course, man. I'm so glad to have you here, guys. He's talking about the class and session that you can find on YouTube and Spotify and Apple. Class and session, it's just a couple bucks a month and you get access to all these bonus content. We talked about Kevin's backstory, how he got into disc golf. We both talked about, you know, if we were to create our own putter, a putting disc, what would it be? What would it fly like? We rambled a couple names off. We talked about a few things. And then we talked about Drive for Show, Putt for Dough, and just shared our thoughts on that. So if you want to go ahead and check out that and get access to all the other class and session episodes going back to season one, go ahead and become a member. But for today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about the story behind Putt Confidently specifically. We're going to talk about putting in so many different ways. It's going to be a great episode, really diving into the nitty gritty of that. And then we are going to review Kevin's current favorite putter, as he told me. We're going to talk about the Gateway Wizard. So buckle up, guys. I'm super excited for the episode. Let's get into it. I love having you on the show. We've been talking a lot. You repping some gear. I got my hats hanging up here on the disc golf wall. I love using my Champ Cap and my Champ Cap Solo. We're talking about Putt Confidently. It's your company. Give us all, you know, the story behind it. Like, how did you start it? Why did you want to start it? Your mission, all the stuff.
Ooh, wow, that's a lot at once.
Take it one at a time. Let's start with why did you start Putt Confidently?
I really like practicing. And no, you did not hear that wrong. I like practicing. I've always liked practicing. I started with basketball. I was always practicing. I was a cyclist. I was a runner. I freaking love practicing. Really, events or like competitions are just, I've always looked at it this way. It's just like in my DNA, but like competitions are just the expression of my practice. And like, did I practice well enough? And you know, that's not marketing like bullcrap right now. It's just the way I've always been. So I love to practice. So I started playing disc golf in late 2017, like kind of late in the fall. So I get the bug and then I'm up here in Western Massachusetts. I remember it was a pretty rough winter that year too. So I'm freaking like jonesing. And I've got a little space, you know, at my house. I've got a little space at work. So I'm just grinding. I'm practicing. I've got like 100 feet to throw or so at work. I've got a stack of putters. Now, what do I get? A marksman basket. You know, it's kind of the only thing on the market at the time that was, you know, to help take it to the next level, you know, advanced. And we've all, you know, hey, the marksman works. I'm not saying it doesn't work. It got me to be a better putter.
Right.
But I had to carry the thing around in my truck, like this extra basket, you know. And then there were some days where I was just off and I wish I had a bigger basket with me, but I didn't, you know, full size basket. So I'm lugging around this marksman. They don't catch that great. They have improved the design. The one I have is one of the older ones that had a thicker pole that bounced off like crap. They have made that pole thinner, so they do catch better now.
That's good.
So, but it, you know, it's like, it wasn't, it makes the basket skinnier, but it wasn't affecting my height. You know, it didn't make me dial in like center chains necessarily, didn't catch for crap. It was very, you know, it was pretty frustrating. And yeah. So I was like, there has to be a better way. Right. And that was, you know, that day, I don't remember the day of the birth of the Champ Cap, but it was sometime in the winter of probably 2018 is when I had the idea that this could be, you know, a thing. And, you know, ideas take time, and we got patents and stuff. So this sort of started a little bit before, like, the disc golf world saw it.
Right, yeah. Oh, of course.
Because we did, you know, first you have to have the ideas. You make your own prototypes at home. We did that. That looked promising. So, yeah, I was like, geez, you know what? Like, I watched a lot of Shark Tank. And I was like, the people on Shark Tank that have patents always, like, do well and get deals. So I started exploring that world of getting patents for something that were actually, you know, protectable, like utility patents. And so that process took a little while. And then, you know, we launched it in, I guess it was 2020 with a Kickstarter, 2021. Mm-hmm. I can't remember these days. But yeah, that's sort of the story. Is I love to practice, and I was trying to get as good as possible at practicing with the tools available at the current time, and I thought they could be improved, you know, a bit. Yeah. So that's where we're at.
Yeah, it's pretty, you know, I love my Champ Cap and Champ Cap Solo, and we'll get into the differences between those two in a little bit. But it's incredible to me how much disc golf has changed in the 6 years that I've been playing. Just how many more coaches, content creators, companies. Then you have other companies that aren't even disc golf affiliated and coming in and sponsoring tournaments, and just how much it's grown. And just seeing, because we've had an influx of people over the last 6 years, just seeing all the new, fresh ideas, new perspectives, ideas for things that people who have been playing for years never even thought of, but those new perspectives coming in. And it's just been, I think, really great for the sport. I know for the longest time there was, and they're still around. I have a couple of them, but you have things like the Disc Dot, and now you have the Champ Cap, and I'm sure there are other tools out there as well. But it's just really cool to sort of see that progression in the sport, because it's going, that means it's going in the right direction. People are bringing fresh ideas in, something like the Champ Cap, doing that. So, as somebody, we've talked a good bit on Instagram. We've interacted a lot. We've been talking here tonight. I know, and you know, and some of the listeners know this, but for those of you that don't, you know, one of the things about the Champ Cap is basically it sits over your basket, and it has like a circle or a ring where you're supposed to putt through, and you can see the chain, and it covers the rest of the basket that you're seeing. One of the things that we talk about on your Instagram page and on the website itself is, you know, improving accuracy and that kind of thing. But the company is called Putt Confidently. So you can you kind of give us a little bit of insight into sort of the meaning behind the name and sort of the, we might call like the secret that actually comes from using the Champ Cap regularly. So the meaning behind the name and how it actually is sort of like the secret behind putting more accurately.
The secret. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Meaning behind the name was we had the Champ Cap kind of like ready to roll. This was right before we launched the Kickstarter. We like didn't really have a name for the company really. And we're starting to like need to fill out like an LLC and like a bank account and stuff like that to get ready for this thing. And we had other ideas for putters, like putting ideas too, putting tools, like the Solo, like, you know, just calling it the Champ Cap LLC or something like that just seemed, I wanted a more umbrella type term.
Yeah.
And I just was like, what the heck, you know, what does this thing make you do? And it's like a putt confidently. And that just sort of, it's sort of an umbrella term for all of the products that we ever are going to come up with, you know, and come out with. We've got, you know, the Solo, we've got the Pickalinks, we've got the Champ Cat Pro. There are more coming.
Sweet.
And so, yeah, working on some prototypes now for some stuff. So it just was an umbrella term for putt confidently. But yes, it does. All of our tools, like, we wouldn't put out a product that we didn't think actually worked and was going to improve your game.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as putt confidently, yeah, you know, you've got, you know, the target hole, and it's got a plastic ring behind it, so there's no flopping in if you mm-hmm. like catch the edge of this thing. This thing is strict.
Yes.
And so it helps with your aim. It helps with your kind of pre-shot routine, with your picking an area. You know, we, you know, they're center chains. We think that's, in general, the best place to be aiming.
Yep.
Other people have different opinions, but we have ours, and that's
exactly what
works for us. And it helps you putt harder as well, because there is that plastic ring backing on the backside of the Champ Cat products. There's one way that you can kind of cheat the system, you know, quote unquote, and it's to putt harder, because the harder right. you putt, you know, it's not, you don't want to be putting these things 50 miles an hour, but it right. increases your pace. If you're just limping them in there,
right,
the ring is going to stop you. Where if you're mm-hmm. putting at like a nice, steady, you know, above average pace, if mm-hmm. you hit the edge, it does have a more likely chance of yes. rebounding into the chains. So
yeah.
it trains you to putt harder and more mm-hmm. confidently, you know? Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. And, you know, that's sort of the secret behind it that I was kind of alluding to, is this ring is going to improve your accuracy. Like, when you take it off, the center of the basket is still there, but ultimately it makes you more confident. I think it also makes you way more committed to the putt, as you were talking about, like having to putt harder, sort of speak, or really commit to that link that you're aiming at to hit it convincingly. I mean, you got to commit to the effort that you're putting, the energy that you're putting into the disc. And so yeah. I like that a lot. I'm super excited. You mentioned a couple things about, like, a few prototypes, you know, in the pipeline that you're working on. I'm super excited to hear about that. And sort of the last thing that I want to ask you about the company is, like, big picture, what are some of the goals that you have for Putt Confidently outside of just product?
The main thing is what our Instagram, you know, bio says, what our YouTube bio says, and it's to help you play at your maximum potential. Like, that is, whatever way we do it, like, that is always going to be our main goal. You know, we're not. Going back to something you said earlier about the new products and new ideas coming into disc golf, you know, disc golf is inherently like a very creative sport. You need to be very mm-hmm. creative out there on the course with every lie. You know, there's generally some kind of creativity involved. And I think that disc golf, it attracts very creative people, you yeah. know, more so than, let's say, like stick golf or like running or cycling, you
right.
know, like, this is a different group of people, and we're going to have different yeah. ideas, different looks at things. And then some of them will go out and create products, but then some of them are content creators. You mm-hmm. know, you're huge, you know? So it's like, there's room for everyone, and you have your mission, you know, with your content, with your creations, and MVP has their mission with their creations. And so do we. And so just wanted to touch back on that, as far as why I think that's a possibility of why you're seeing so many different takes and spins on
yeah.
like, even disc retrievers. You can look at disc, there's like 18 disc retrievers, and all of them work.
Yeah.
And all yeah. of them, you know, have a different look. I got a
couple right back there.
Yeah. It's fascinating, you know? So yeah, disc golf brings in really creative people. And so I think that
I love that
is one of the best things of the sport. I don't think we're going to see an end in creation yeah. ever in yeah. disc golf.
Yeah, I never even thought of it like that, but you're 100% right. I mean, me and my buddy, like, he's played, you know, 2 to 3 times as long as I've played. He's been playing since he was in high school. And the way we build our bags are different, even though we have yep. some similarities. But you just look at all the pros and how they build their bags. And it's just like, it's all about how you play your game, the yep. creativity. What are your strengths and weaknesses? How do you... Mm-hmm. you know, avoid certain things and you know, you try and you tend to lean towards doing something when you're unsure. Like we all have our, you know, fail safes kind of thing. So I love that. I never even thought of it like that, but that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
When you go and like talk to people on the course and they're just creative, unique individuals. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, stick golf. I mean, what are you going to, you all got a 7-iron, an 8-iron and a 4, you know, like there's no real creativity involved in that sport. You know, there's some with shot shaping and such like that, of course. But, and then, yeah, just looping back to the question you actually asked me was, just to put one little bow on that is, you know, this, and everyone that has a Champ Cap product, whether a solo or a pro knows this, there's one other thing it does probably better than anything else on the market as far as practice goes, is it never ends. The first time you step up to take your first putt at a Champ Cap product in every single practice session, you still don't know if you can make it through that damn thing on the first putt. He's laughing because it's so true. And everyone has it, and it is the closest thing is to replicating like a must make. That is the most important putt of your practice session, possibly, because that is as close as you're going to get to replicating like a must make putt on hole 18.
Oh man,
to win the B tier, like, you know, like that is it. If you can commit and make that putt that first time of every practice session, you're off to a good start. You know, if you can get, but it never ends. I'm going to tell you, I've been putting at a Champ Cap product longer than anyone else on the planet.
Right.
It never, that anxiety on that first putt never ceases to exist. You never will step up to that thing and be so confident that you can put it in there. So it's very good, like mental and emotional training as well as physical.
And the first couple times, several times, maybe even first few months of using it, you're going to, you know, deal with a lot of that frustration because you're going to hit that ring and you'll be like, oh, that would have gone in. It's like, it would have gone in on a normal basket. So like, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but we're trying to tighten things up here because you don't want it. You want to make the job as easy as possible for the basket, you know? And
disc golf doesn't have, we don't have like ifs and buts and maybes. We're like about definites in our sport. It has to end in those chains, in the bottom of that cage. And if you can't handle, I think every disc golfer can handle theoretically using a Champ Cap product. Like we're used to not, we don't birdie every hole. I mean, this isn't, you know, bowling with lane blocker rails on, like we screw up and but it is the people, we're still in the early adopter phase really as far as our product goes. Like word is spreading, the grass, you know, it works, you know, it's saving people strokes, so people are talking about it to their friends. But it is you have to be a little flexible in your mind of like You almost have to get rid of that. It would have went in. Like I don't think like that when I'm practicing with a Champ Cap. I understand that other people probably do that initially, but eventually I think you lose that. And it's just like it didn't go in. The target hole. And that's why we came up with the solo, because we did come out with the pro, the full. Encompassing, you know, encompasses the whole basket with four different size target holes. That is honestly more of an advanced level product. Like that's something I use. Like if you would consider yourself like a 950 rated or above putter, I think that's a good product for you. But the solo's more, you can take a break from the ring. You don't have to start on the ring. You can start on the open basket and come over to the target hole. And it's a much more versatile product. It fits way more baskets. I honestly think that's a better overall product than the full Champ Cap Pro with the solo.
Much more entry level, which just helps get it in the hand of a lot of people. Obviously, you know, it's also a little, it has a lower price point too, which helps people get into it. And speaking of the Champ Cap Solo, where can listeners and viewers on YouTube find these products? Where can they find these products?
Puckconfidently.com is our site. Lot, you know, a fair amount of stores are starting to cover them and keep them in stock now. So you might
That's great.
Reach out to your local store, see if they have any stock left. Amazon, you know, we're on Amazon. So there's a few different places now. We just shipped to Canada. So if you're in Canada and listening, we just started working with Toplink as a distributor up there. So it's going to be very coming cool. to your local store. It's been frustrating for us and I'm sure for the Canadian customers. We get a lot of websites visits from Canada, but I don't know if you've tried shipping anything to Canada, man. It's like 4 hours for me.
Yeah.
And it costs, it literally doubles the cost of the product, you know, just through customs and stuff. So it's been, so we don't get a lot of conversion rate from Canada, understandably so. Trust me, I do not blame you for not wanting to spend $40 to ship something that costs $35. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So anyways, we're solving that problem. We literally just yesterday shipped a big old shipment to Toplink. So that's going to be available in Canada. Yeah. So keep your eyes open if you're up north.
Awesome.
But yeah, you know, there's a few different ways to pick them up at this point. Yeah. That's something we're focused on this year, is doing more distribution, like getting into Europe. Same thing. We get a fair amount of website visits, you know, not a ton. Same thing, same problem. Shipping is ridiculous. Yeah. So that's on us to fix that. And we're going to work on that this year. That's our goal.
Very cool.
For this year, it was Canada and Europe. We got Amazon covered kind of last fall. Which is a nice place, especially for beginners. That's where most, and not even necessarily beginners, but that's where most people buy their practice baskets. And you know, it's a nice time to pick up both at once. And, you know, it's Amazon. It's,
it's quick.
It's prime, you know, hey, it works. It works for people. Yeah. So, so that's where they can pick them up. And yeah, the solo is not that expensive. It is going to save you strokes. And it's, yeah, of course, I'm biased. But as far as like a practice tool, something you can do on your own time, I don't know of anything that can improve your game so much. Like, I'm not trying to talk trash. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit of trash.
That's okay.
I'm sorry, like the pro pole, like I just don't know how the pro pole helps my game. Like I've tried to use it. I've tried to look for tutorials on how to use it and I just can't find them. It just, I can't figure out how to use that thing to like actually help my game at my house.
Right.
A straight up practice basket, you don't need a solo. That's going to help your game a lot. A throwing net is going to help your game a lot.
I use my throwing net way more than my pro pole.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. It's just more fluid. It just it's more disc. It's going to transfer better, you know, to the course that practice. So yeah, the solo, get a practice basket first. Maybe a solo next. Maybe a throwing net next. I don't know what that order is. You can come up with that for yourself, but. Just going back to the beginning, I love to practice. I've tried all of this stuff, and it's never going to end. There's going to be something new tomorrow. There's the tech disc now, which is very cool. A lot of data, and there's going to be something new tomorrow. So it's everyone's trying to get better. No, not everyone's trying to get better. I also respect. I respect the people that. That just love disc golf and like go out and play. And like, I'm not trying to pressure you and make you feel bad for not having a solo. Like you just love going out and playing with your buddies and you like when you get a birdie and, but don't lose any sleep over, not shooting a 1,000 rated round. Like, bravo. Like you're just loving disc golf. And I am so cool with that. So I'm not trying to make anyone feel bad. Like, or slacking or anything like that.
No, I totally get that. And yeah, you know, that's a separation that I've made multiple times in videos. Like, hey, this, if you want to get better, you got, like, if you're actively trying to improve, you got to do it this way. If you're just saying, hey, I want to tweak a little thing here or there, or just, I just play for fun, then you don't really have to worry about it. And, you know, this could be one of those things. I also want to put a shameless little plug there that I do have a link in the description that you can use an affiliate link with Putt Confidently, that if you wanted to check one out, you can use that link. You don't even have to put in a code because everything's set up there for you. You can go ahead and get one from their website, and I get a little kickback and you support the show and myself that way too. So thank you so much, dude, for talking us through the company, your vision, your product, and just breaking down sort of why you wanted to get all of this started. I think it's benefited a lot of people. I know I have benefited from it. I've been bouncing back and forth between this idea of leaving my basket in my car and during my lunch break at work, going and putting for 15, 20 minutes. And I haven't done it yet, but I'm telling you, I'm definitely getting close to start doing it. And I probably will, because that is probably going to be some of the easiest time for me to just get away and putt. Because once I come home, things get busy. So let's go ahead and let's talk about putting. We have a good bit to cover here, but we'll go through it pretty quickly. We're going to be diving into the different putting types, and we'll be looking at, you know, push, spin, straddle, stagger, just kind of talking a little bit about how we like to approach those types of putts, their pros and cons, strengths or weaknesses, you might say. We'll talk a little bit about the act of putting and the different phases, and we'll go through that in detail. And then we'll wrap up with the disc review. So for this first putt, I just want to ask you, Kevin, do you find yourself more of a push or spin putter?
More of a push putter.
More of a push putter?
I would say I'm pretty typical spush if you're gonna.
Yeah.
Like my lower body, even my like shoulder action is more of a push putter, but I've got the kind of spin at the last second wrist action. So I'd say I'm, you know, if you're going to call it spush putting, I would say I'm more, a big difference, I think, with spin, push putting or spin putting is your elbow. Where is your elbow in relation to, where is your wrist in relation to your elbow? Mm-hmm. If your wrist is like in line with your elbow, I would say you're more of a spin putter. You're really not generating any power from the shoulder. You're like all spin. Where if your wrist is below your elbow, it's tough to show on this little screen.
Right.
I would say that's you're generating more of a push, you know, especially from a muscle in your shoulder.
Right.
Your medial deltoid, it's called.
Yeah.
So you're pushing it a little bit. So I would put myself, my wrist is definitely below my elbow. So I would say I'm definitely a spush putter. But like, what would you call Andrew Marweed? Because my putts, I'm not quite as limber as him. But like, what would you, my putt looks a decent bit like Marweed's.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I've gone back and forth between this idea of spush putting. I've talked with people who say it's not a thing. And then I think about my experience and I talk with other people who say it is a thing. And I don't know where I fall yet on that whole thing about spush putting, but I definitely think that there are some putters out there that have a lot of combinations seemingly of the two. It sounds like you and I have similar putting strokes where the disc kind of comes down more than it comes in to our gut. Like it would, like Simon Lazat is a spin putter. He brings that disc into his gut and then pops it out. A more push style putting is having that disc drop low. Someone like Ricky, someone like Paul, and Marwee, they kind of drop that disc down a little bit. And then you can see the wrist action happen. You can see that pop up. But there's also that vertical lift that comes from that pendulum with their swing. And so I definitely fall in that camp of, you know, I'm not quite sure about spush yet. I do think I have a little bit more of a push, and I would say that Marweed is in that world with Paul, where it's like it's not coming down super low, but he has some vertical movement on his putt, which is not something that you would see typically with a lot of spin putters. Like you don't really see Simon or Eagle or Emerson Keith have a lot of vertical motion. It's more that horizontal in and out motion with their putts. But yeah, so that's kind of Do you see any pros and cons between the two, or do you think that it doesn't matter, especially, I'll ask that follow-up question afterwards, but do you think there are any pros and cons between the two?
I think it depends on, we've said this like three times already in this podcast, your level of play. Like, if you're a 1,000 rated putter, if you're a 1,000 rated player and, you know, a close to 1,000 rated circle one putter, there's like one place for you to start gaining strokes. And it's why Gannon Burr is winning so many tournaments, circle two. So it's the spin putt really seems to help a lot, circle two, especially like midway into circle two, like start talking 45, 50 feet. It's tough to spush putt that far. It seems to be a little easier to get the spin there. That's Simon, that's Eagle, that's the highlights. So if you're looking to save stroke, you know, gain strokes on your competition and you're already a really good circle one putter, yeah, working on the spin putt, at least for circle two. And I talked to Tai, you know, Tai is a freaking gangster in circle two.
Oh yeah.
And he's like a prototype spin putter.
Yeah.
He's got that double move with his elbow just absolutely dialed. So to answer your question, actually though, I think, because very few of us are above 1,000 rated, or like, I think that the spush type putt is the best because you're not going to three putt that often. I think that's the problem with like newer players or 800, you know, 850 rated players trying to putt like Simon, is if it goes in, it's really cool. But at least what I see on course with this level of player is that when you miss, it's real bad and you three putt often. And that's why, like, I'm not really that much better of a player than this hypothetical 800 rated player. I just don't three putt. I never three putt. I three putt once last year. It's because I hit a cage and rolled away. So that is why I think this push putt is safer, but also gives you a really good chance of making it compared with a full spin putt.
Yeah. I definitely tend to agree. I do think, similar to like the backhand and forehand, with the push and the spin, one just has a higher ceiling. Like, there's a reason why you see players that are more backhand dominant able to play any course, whereas more forehand dominant players, especially on the tour today, aren't able to dominate nearly as much. The backhand just has a higher ceiling. And I think the same goes for the spin putt. It's just, no matter where you end up, you need less space for the putt to come out of your hand. And I think that's super helpful, whether it's uphill, downhill, around obstructions, through obstructions. You don't need a lot of ceiling. And that's one of the biggest weaknesses for the push putt, is if you get off the fairway, if you have obstructions in the way, you now have this self-enforced or self-induced elevation change in your putt that you have to account for. Does that mean that you should never learn how to push putt? No, I think there's even spin putters often have to, you know, have the disc lift in a slightly different way, whether it's over an obstacle to get, you know, up and over and then drop, you know, it has its uses, but I definitely think the spin has a higher, it has a higher floor with like the skill level that's necessary, but it also has a higher ceiling for what you're able to do, as you were talking there about Gannon Burr from circle two and, you know, the circle three putts of being like 80 feet away and just able to drill those 70, 80 foot putts in with consistency. And at that distance, if you have the control to be able to do that, even if you do miss, you're not going 60 feet past the basket. It's going to be back within that, you know, tap in range or very close to. Very cool. Now about straddle and stagger, I want us, you know, for those who might be brand new, basically the difference between straddle and stagger is in your foot placement. Regardless of whether you're righty or lefty, on the staggered stance, you're going to have one foot in front of the other. And then on the straddle stance, think of it as if you're basically, you know, lining up a free throw, or you're a goalie playing soccer. Your feet are parallel. They're in line with each other. And the disc is going to typically come more in between your legs, whereas with a straddle putt, it might come more over whatever leg is in front or slightly off to the side. But yeah, so Kevin, when you go and putt, are you lining up a straddle putt, a stagger putt? Where do you find comfort? Is it situational? What is kind of your go-to with that?
If I've got, if there's no obstructions, it's flat, you know, no hill, no slope. Yeah, I'm stagger stance. Unfortunately, playing on the East Coast here, how often does that happen?
Not very often.
So I would say I end up, it's about 50-50 on course. If I had a preference, it would be be stagger stance. But yeah, we end up straddle putting. I would say it's close to 50% of the time, just because there's a tree, there's something going on, which is insane because I practice my straddle putting, but a lot of people never even practice their straddle putting, but you end up doing it, at least on the East Coast. I haven't played across the whole country, you know, but 50% of the time you're going to end up doing this putt that you never, ever practice. Mm-hmm. And then people kind of get upset that they don't make them. So
yeah, there was definitely a time where I was not practicing straddle. And it was like whenever I had to do it, I was like, man, I really need to work on this.
Now, I think if I was going to start over playing disc golf, I would only straddle putt. I would take the sort of Kristen Tatar, Nate Sexton approach of just straddle putt, because you can straddle putt anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
And just do that. But honestly, I love the feeling, like the mechanics of a stagger stance putt. I don't know why. It just feels so good. Like just pushing off that back leg,
right?
Like hitting your brace, like just seeing, like having more range of motion with your arm. I just freaking love it. You know, it just feels great. It's,
Yeah. For the longest time I did a stagger putt. And I remember in December of this past year, I was warming up for a tournament and I was just missing everything. And then all of a sudden I was like, let me just, maybe it's nerves. It had been my first tournament in over a year and a half. And so I start doing some stagger putting. I'm like, everything just starts falling. Boom, boom, boom. Everything just keeps, because the miss that I was having was things were pulling right. And so then I went to stagger, and what happened for the last 4 months is just, it helped me recenter my putt. I've never been someone who relies on fade because I don't putt with an overstable putter. But the thing is, I was just finding that my elbow and my wrist were just leaking out right. And so going to stagger really helped me dial in that realignment that I needed for my putt. I recently, like as of Saturday, a few days before the recording of this episode, I started messing around again with the stagger putt a little bit just to kind of get back comfortable with it. And I definitely agree with you. Like there's both uses. I feel comfortable with both, but there is something about the stagger that just feels more natural because I think like from all the years of running and playing basketball, like it just feels a little bit more of a natural position for me as well. But it is something in the back of my mind. I'm like, okay, you know what your miss was before. Let's see if we can, you know, dial that back in and get that fixed.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's a never ending battle.
Oh,
but that's one thing. If you're a newer player that's listening, well, I guess it doesn't matter what stage you're in, but don't forget to practice your straddle putts, you know, square up. You can see it working. I'm starting to see more and more players do it exclusively, especially around here. I think the math has gotten out, the data has gotten out of just like, yeah, dude, I freaking have to straddle putt all the time anyway. If I'm in an open field, why? If you can just practice one thing, if you can just do one thing, do one thing, you know, and you do end up, like you're saying, with, you have to experiment with it. You might have to switch your cadence up a little bit with your, because you don't have the range of motion like you do with stagger putting, where you can come back further on your weight shift. You know, you're loading backward. You know, you have to be a little quicker with the straddle putt to just pop it a little faster to get it that 25, 30 feet. So that takes a little bit of time for people to figure out. But once you get it, you're good to go. You got a one size fits all. You know, option.
That it's honestly been super helpful in these Tennessee woods for the last 4 months playing with Stagger. It just has, everything has felt comfortable, and even just like the weight adjustment and shift around obstacles doesn't feel as strange because I'm already used to that position. So that's definitely something that's been very nice. Now you've already started touching on this a little bit there in some of those final comments. I want to just touch on real quick the different like phases or elements of putting. The way I look at putting, there's three stages to it. We have the aiming stage, the loading stage, and then the releasing stage. This isn't anything I think groundbreaking for anyone to when they really think about it and listen, but when we break down the putt that way, I think it can kind of help us sort of start to segment and just think about, okay, what am I doing in this stage? What should I be focusing on? Because putting can be so mental that I have found that sometimes it's helpful if you just like separate it, and then eventually you do want your mind to go blank. That way you're not thinking while putting. And I think, you know, our conversation about the champ cap and all that kind of stuff can help. But when you're aiming while putting, I feel like there are a lot of different schools of thought on where to aim, whether it's the front chain, the pole, a back chain, because you want to, you know, putt through the basket kind of thing. When you go to aim, what are you looking at? How high do you aim, or how low, left or right? Like, what is your ideal aiming spot?
Personally, center chains, because it just gives the most room for error. Like, I just think mathematically it makes the most sense. Now, if that center chain is on the back side of the basket or the front side of the basket, I'm looking at the chains closest to me. To keep it as simple as possible. But actually, I do like that idea of looking at the backside chains. I think it makes it a little bit more complicated, and I want to keep things generally as simple as possible. So I would say center chains and the closest chains to me. I don't pick a link, honestly, like a singular link. It makes, it's just too stressful. It hurts, like it hurts my eyes. It's like too much. I just want that general area, center chains is, and I'm just lining up my, my front foot pointed, you know, that direction, my disc on, I'm a big proponent of painting the pole. I think that is just a massive cheat code that gets forgotten way too fast for most disc golfers. You hear it in a, you know, when you first start playing disc golf and you do it for like 2 weeks and then it seems too simple. So you move on. That is one of the best freaking, like, sports science wise, having external aiming cues like that. External cues are far more effective than like internal cues, like body types or like thinking about my fingertip, like thinking about painting the pole. An external cue is proven to be far more effective at helping people do things better in like every single sport.
Well, you know, and that makes a lot of sense because the pole is always going to be vertical. It's always going to be right there. You're going to know whether or not your hand was off it or on it, and that kind of thing. And when it comes to aiming, I am with you. There was a period of time where I picked a like singular link, but it then made like, oh, if I missed two links above it or two links below it, it's kind of like, oh man, I missed my, it's like, well, no, you didn't. You're 27 feet back. You're trying to hit this link that's, you know, an inch, inch and a half big. It's all right if you're, and so, you know, it's all right if you're in the general vicinity. I am similar. I pick that general vicinity. I don't necessarily put in mind like through the basket. That's not something that has psychologically stuck for me. I like the idea of aiming at the pole because I think it's one of those things where no matter how you're looking at the basket, it's always going to be there. But for me, and this may just be like a quirk of mine, if I see like stickers or mud or drawings or something on the pole, I find that to be almost more distracting than like picking a link. And so I just like something that's always going to be constant, aiming at a link, aiming at a group of links. And I aim, like you said, like right in the heart of the basket. Do you ever adjust your putt when you're aiming uphill or downhill?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, if there's tailwind, you know, it's tough to talk too much about that because it's so circumstantial. Like, oh, well, how much headwind? Oh, well, how much tailwind? How much crosswind? that's just something you just learn as you play and like experience mm-hmm. the situations more and more often. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I mean, sometimes if there's enough headwind, I'm aiming at the cage, honestly, you know, or the band, if it's a tailwind, you know, for sure. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Like, you're never going to make every putt. You're never going to nail every single situation. Mm-hmm. And you just have to do your best. And wind is one of the most insane factors, you know, in disc golf. And it gets, I don't know if it's more exemplified on the putting green, but it sure as heck feels like it, you know, compared with throwing.
Yeah.
Damn, this wind needs to quit, bro.
Yeah. Well, you know? I almost think that's where the nerves are more, you know, facing a 15 mile an hour headwind off the tee is like, all right, I'll just grab a more stable driver and I'll throw it flat or with some hyzer and it'll beat this headwind kind of thing. And it's like, oh, I'm using an AVR in this same 15 mile an hour headwind and I'm 20 feet away. And it's for par. I just missed the birdie putt. So now I'm coming back.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. So now let's talk about the loading phase. We already kind of touched on this a little bit, talking about, you know, push putting, spin putting, those players, regardless of how you putt, you're going to have your own unique thing. But what I like to think about in the loading phase, and this is something that actually comes from like the firearm industry, is like, if you think about snipers, especially, and then the military, when they breathe in and then they breathe out, that is when they are calmest and when they're the most steady with their hand. And so one of the things that I've done for years now is I'll breathe in on my loading phase or like right before I start my loading phase. And then as I bring the disc down to get ready to putt, I exhale for like a steadiness. And maybe it's just more mental for me, but my loading phase is really more, I use it more as a, I'm making sure I'm aligned with the basket. I've already have my target, so to speak, picked out on the basket, but it's about sort of calming that internal voice and calming that body to just trust that muscle memory and everything that I have practiced. And that's kind of how I treat my loading phase. It's almost about like getting in the zone. I was very much the same when I did track and field. I did hurdles. And so I'd be getting into the blocks and be like, on your mark. And I'm like, all right, let's go. And it's like, get set. And it's like, everything just like collapses and gets quiet. And so that's just like something for that has just translated for me so well. Obviously, that's not something that I can force on somebody else and teach. Like, I could recommend that idea to them in their loading phase. But I'm wondering, like, do you have sort of this ritual or this thing that you do in that loading phase right before you go to release the disc?
No, I love what you said there about the breathing in. That's a thought I've had, you know, exhaling, like the sniper idea. I have not implemented it yet, but I'm going to start doing that. I really like that idea. That seems like a experiment that's going to go well most of the time for most people.
Yeah, really, I don't like see that. How it can mess you up.
No, I mean, the one thing is like if you're overthinking, you know, puts one too many chefs in the kitchen, possibly.
Yes, for sure.
So that's possible. But as far as the loading part, it's a great question. I have a lot of automaticity when it comes to that right now. As far as at least a stagger stance goes, when it comes to straddle, I'm working on switching my cadence to be a little bit faster, to get a little more pop. Mm-hmm. To be able to hit those low ceilings, you know, a little bit better, or to hit the straddle from a little deeper. Mm-hmm. So I am conscious about my straddle putt loading right now. But as far as stagger stance, I do have the sort of 1-2-3, like you said, on your mark, get set, go. I think that's a really good, like, two count on my weight shift back, you know, my loading. I'm a two count, and then a one count going forward to get that pop. Nice. So sort of a 2-to-1. So it's the same idea you're talking about. You know, Philo talks about it with apple pie. If you go back and watch some of his older tutorials. So it's sort of a universal timing thing of 1-2-3. So we're all onto it. We're all doing it different ways. But I'm at the point where it's sort of unconscious. I'm more concerned with my painting the pole, my alignment, my footing. You know, I mean, that's one thing if we're stagger stance, you know, that back leg, if it's slippery, you know, that's where it becomes more conscious, necessary to make sure that you're getting the drive you need. But it is probably the most important part of the putt is that loading phase. You know, this is something I've been talking about recently, is like hitting the brace in your putt. And you got to be able to get to that brace while, you know, everything else, keeping everything else on time as well. But it's, for me, the putt, the execution really starts with hitting the brace, and you can't hit the brace until you load properly. So it's more of a setup phase. It doesn't get a lot of credit, the weight shift back. Like, it's sort of the supporting actor in the putt.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, the movie would have sucked without it. So you needed it, but it doesn't get any credit, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? Yeah. I love all that. I love that insight. And I'm glad that the breathing thing might be helpful for you and anybody else listening. Like, give it a shot. I mean, yes, obviously you don't want too many chefs in the kitchen, but mechanically speaking, I mean, it might feel a little weird at first because now you're thinking about your breathing, but I think it's very like meditative. And so it just kind of can help calm some of those nerves. I've even implemented 2 deep breaths on my putt. Like, I'll take my putters and go up and like breathe in, and my hands are above my head. And then as I rest my shoulders, I exhale. And then I do it one more time on the loading. And then as I've exhaled, I putt. So I'm not like inhaling or anything when I putt. It just helps me sort of reach that sort of calm state when putting. And it's been beneficial for me, and it's become such a part of my routine. I don't know how I could ever break out of it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think it could really help with timing too. Like exhaling popping. Like, that's like half of putting is just timing. There's lots of different ways to do it, but there's one thing that all the good people at putting do. You know, there's Matty O, there's Paul McBeth, there's Simon Lizotte. They all have perfect, damn near perfect timing. And it sounds like what you're talking about with the exhale could really help with some timing. I really like that idea.
Yeah, of course. You're more than welcome to use it.
Yeah, I will. I will also give you credit. So how about that?
Appreciate that.
Cool.
So now you kind of touched on it there. I don't think there's a whole lot to say to it, but the final phase of the putt is obviously the release. And one of the things that I will say about this is thinking about the hand. I think a lot of people are pretty much on board, but I think something that's really important about the release phase or the release stage of the putt is, especially if you are struggling with putting, is stopping that hand on the basket, on the pole, whatever it might be. I think a lot of times a lot of people end up missing because their wrist sort of like leaks and pops out. Yep. And so if that's you on the release phase, you don't necessarily have to think about anything else, but just popping and sort of shaking hands with the basket is what a lot of people say. I think that can be very helpful and beneficial, and could help you sort of diagnose some issues that you might be having with your putting stroke if you find that you're missing often. What do you think about that, Kevin? Do you have any thoughts about the releasing stage of the putt?
I have. This is the one thing that you, when you sent me the notes, that I have no thoughts on, because I do not think about releasing. I don't think you should be thinking about releasing. This might be like the hottest take I have when it comes to putting.
Okay, let's hear
This is so, like, would you say that Steph Curry is thinking, like, when he's taking his free throw or his three-pointer, like, is he thinking like, end with my wrist like this, goosenecked? Like, no. Absolutely no. Not.
Yeah.
So I think that as far as release goes, you shouldn't even be thinking about it. Like, it requires execution, you know, of the movements prior to the release that creates the proper follow through. Like, I believe that's what Steph Curry would say. Like, if I asked him that, he'd be like, Kevin, what is wrong with you? Of course I'm not thinking about that.
Right.
So I think as far as like thinking about shaking hands with the basket, I think that's putting one too many chefs in the kitchen. I think there can only be two chefs in this kitchen. You know, it's like loading properly, making sure you have good footing and good, you know, ability to drive, and then hitting that pop. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's it. Putt over. If you were aligned properly, if you had the right power, if you had the right, like, dexterity, you know, mm-hmm. you're not too tight. Like, if you do all of those things properly, execute those movements concisely, mm-hmm. you're just going to have a good follow through. And it's like, right. having your hand pointed at the basket is not, it's an effect, not the cause.
Right.
Of making your putt. So that's my hot take on, on like follow through mm-hmm. and shaking hands with the basket. I don't think you should be thinking about that at all. I think it happens naturally if you do the other couple steps first. Okay. So I don't know how you feel about that. That is, is controversial in the disc golf world. I'm sure. Yeah.
Maybe so. 'Cause honestly, I haven't met anybody who hasn't had thoughts about like, oh yeah, shaking hands with the basket or that kind of release. But you know, to be fair and honest, I mean, it makes sense. Like Peyton Manning wasn't thinking about how his wrist is coming to his hip pocket after throwing the football. Right. Steph Curry's not thinking about, you know, the curled wrist, the gooseneck when he's shooting. Golfers aren't necessarily thinking about their follow through. Even disc golfers aren't necessarily thinking about their follow through. It's just an effect of everything that they've done in the, whether it's the forehand or the backhand, everything that has built up to that, that follow through is just an effect of it. My initial thought is I wonder if at least that concept becomes muscle memory. And so then eventually no one's thinking about it, because I don't necessarily look at the basket anymore and say, okay, let me shake hands with you, but it's just become more natural. Like my wrist ends up going that way. So I'm wondering if maybe it might be a helpful idea or concept to consider, and maybe just to think about only when you're practicing and not when you're necessarily out on the course, to sort of train that to be muscle memory. But even then, you make a good point. If you're doing the first two things consistently and you're lining everything up and you're loading and you're painting the pole, will that not just be a natural consequence or a natural result of it? And that very well might be the case. We could have just honestly been splitting hairs about this whole idea the entire time.
Yeah, you just touched on it. I mean, I think if you're painting the pole, you know, you're sort of, you know, hands like one other thing I have with, and I haven't rehearsed this at all, really, but I saw it in your notes coming up and I just had a couple thoughts about it. But you don't stick your hand out like straight out in front of you. I don't know if anyone's watching this, but like that's not really how you shake hands at like chest height. Right. You shake hands like low, like almost belly to belly. And that's like much closer to painting the pole is what I'm getting at. Like if you're painting the pole, you are like that's about where you pop, where you actually shake hands with someone, like you're meeting them at the restaurant or whatever, like it's low, you know, and that's about where you pop if you're a spush putter. Mm-hmm. And anyhow, if you're painting the pole, yeah, I think that it looks like you're shaking hands with the basket. Really, you just executed your movements very well. And I think, like I mentioned earlier about external cues and internal cues in sports science, you know, when you start thinking about something so far from the center of your body, like your wrist, like having it like your fingertips, like there is a lot that can go wrong there. You're almost overthinking it at that point. And I think that's what's causing a lot of left and right movements, where if you just focused closer to the body on more gross movements, I think a lot of people would have a lot more success with that. Like I'm guessing if you go ask, you know, just in your local area, you know, top putters, are you thinking about shaking hands with the basket? Are you thinking that far away, you know, from your center of gravity? Or are you thinking about things closer to the center of your body? I'm guessing they're all going to say, I'm not thinking that, like, it's done. By the time the disc is that far away from my body, I'm done. Like I did everything. It's out of my control at that point. And trying to control something, like you have very little strength, very little control, you know, with your arm extended working on something compared with, you know, closer, you know, closer to the legs or the hips or something like that. So that's my hot take probably for the, I think there might've been a hot take in the,
in the
pre-show,
the class in session. I think there was. Yeah.
I think there was too.
Very cool. I like it. It's fun conversation. And, you know, it also brings new opinions and perspectives up, and it definitely makes me think. And, you know, I can't sit here and say, oh no, I totally disagree with you, because there's definitely a lot of validity. I mean, when there, my hot take is that, and I've been guilty of this, so I'm also criticizing myself here, is that I think disc golf just overanalyzes a lot of things. And I think it takes away one from like the art that is in the sport. And I think there are some consequences that have followed that, where we almost become, it's like paralysis by analysis. We overanalyze something, and then all of a sudden we can't improve because we're overthinking constantly. And it makes me, I just watched this video with my buddy who was in town, the same guy who taught me how to play disc golf. We were watching Happy Gilmore, and it was just one of those, just send it on home, just send it home. And then when the putt doesn't go, he's like, get in your home. Why won't you get in your home? You know, just the whole thing about putting is just send it on home. And I like that idea. When it's that far from your body, if you can't stop the putt in time to be able to like recalibrate, it's too, you know, there's no way that anything that you're going to do at that point is going to drastically improve your chances of making it, because it's too far. What's done is done, so to speak. All the load up and the release, it's happened. So I really like that insight, and it's definitely something that's going to sit with me. I'm going to be thinking about, I'm going to be, you know, really just thinking it over and messing around with it and asking some people in my Discord, you know, hey, what do you guys think about this? But yeah, so if you guys who are listening or watching the channel or watching on YouTube, you guys need help with your putting, you want to get some, just some insight into, hey, what am I doing here? I feel like something's off. I feel imbalanced, whatever it might be. Go ahead and DM me, whether it's on Discord or on Instagram, and we can schedule a free coaching call. Your first coaching call with me will be free. We'll talk for 30 minutes and just whatever it is, whether it's your backhand, whether it's your forehand, putting, building a bag. Maybe you're brand new to the sport and you don't even know where to begin. Go ahead and message me and we can set something up. I'd be more than happy to help you. But now let's go ahead and let's wrap this episode up talking about your favorite putter. This disc review is sponsored by OTB Discs. And Kevin, you wanted to talk about the Gateway Wizard, something that OTB Discs has a lot of. So you guys can check it out in so many plastics. That's one thing that Gateway has more than anything. I think more than any other company is the number of different plastics. So Kevin, go ahead and tell us about the Gateway Wizard, why you love it. Why is it your current favorite putter?
Let me go back to the last segment real quick. To say, definitely, I think coaching is super underrated in disc golf right now. I think that a lot of people are going out, buying the new, you know, hot disc of the month or, you know, whatever, spending 40, 50 bucks on that.
Time lapse.
Don't get, you know. And I think that game is up to, you know, it's always going to be there. But I think that, like what you said about perspective, about, I'm not trying to like ruin or hijack your podcast right now.
No, you're good, man.
Like disc golf is, I think, at a bit of a tipping point where a lot of stuff, such as like shake hands with the basket, like a lot of this, like slide the glass across the bar, you know, as far as like backhand goes. A lot of this has just been said since the beginning, and this is just what we say, and this is just how we tell beginners how to do things. And I think that, like you said in the beginning of the show, there's lots of new stuff, new ideas, new tools, new products. One of these new products is coaching that's happening. And I think that with you, with Tai, with Power DGA, like there's lots of different avenues. And I think that is money much better spent than getting another time lapse, you know, or the next, whatever the next new Simon disc is. Yeah. You can't value it until you try it, right?
Right.
Like, people don't know the value of a one-on-one coaching session. Like, that's the value, is the one-on-one. Like, you can go watch a YouTube video, you can do the subscription stuff, but like, it's not for you. Like, Antonia is going to tell you what you exactly are doing wrong, and you probably don't know what that is. So I think that's something new in disc golf coaching.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you.
Man, for sure. Like, it's just something like it. It's just the value, the long-term value of getting 1 hour coaching session, you know, maybe two or three, is going to have a much longer value than whatever that disc of the month is. Like, yeah, you'll get your little Instagram post out of it, or like your friends will think you're cool and want to throw it, but like, they'll think it's a lot cooler when you start kicking their ass in 3 weeks, because you had a couple coaches coaching. They're going to be a lot more impressed with that than MVP. You're just giving MVP status. Like, why not get some for yourself?
Yeah.
So anyways,
I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate that. And not that I love Simon and MVP. I'm sure you do too.
Of course.
But as far as entry points. Yeah. You got it. And if you want to throw the time lapse, you want to throw, you know, the KJ Naibo T-Bird, that's like super overstable. You know, if you want to be able to do those kinds of things, like, you got to have that foundation set up, and we can do that in coaching. But yes, like you said there, let's talk about the Gateway Wizard.
The Wizard. So in the, I keep forgetting the name of the pre-show. I'm sorry. Class and session. I'm not going to spoil it, but I talked about the putter I was using. It's a very obscure putter. Well, not obscure putter, but not many people use it for putting.
Right.
So I've switched from to this, the Wizard SS, this year. Now, why did I do that? The putter I was using was very glidey, very understable. I like the Wizard SS. It's got a good amount of grip, a good amount of glide, but it also has a good amount of stability. And the thing that when I was missing putts last year, it was because of the wind. You know, it's because of that. Like, I was having to carry like two or three putting putters to adjust for the wind. And I said, you know what, going into this year, you know, it's March. I started the year with like, you know what, we're done with that. I'm carrying two, because I'm a big twice or it's luck guy. If I'm in like a practice round, if I have a putt, I'm putting two putters.
Same.
I want them to be the same putter. And I want them to be all conditions gear, like that Nike, you know, brand they have. Like, these two putters are ready for anything. And I think the Wizard SS, as far as I'm concerned, is the all conditions gear putter. Because it can handle the wind, it can handle no wind. Like, it, the other putter I was using had so much glide that I almost, if there was no wind or if there was like a little bit of tailwind, I didn't have to try at all. It just like went in. And with the Wizard, I always have to try at least a little bit.
Right.
And I think that makes me a more consistent putter, because I never get a putt off. I always have to try at least a little bit to get it there, because it's not.
You have to commit super to glide. It.
Yeah. There you go. That's the word, commitment. Yep. And so that's why I like it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the, for those of you who may not know, the Wizard is one of the like most popular putters in all of disc golf. It's Gateway's number one seller. They sell probably more Wizards than everything else combined. It's a slower putter. It's a two speed. It only has three glide. It's listed as zero turn and two fade. And really that is just mean that it's that neutral to overstable slot. Whether you're throwing it or putting with it, it's going to have a little bit of fade, a little bit of that bite on the end. One of the things that I've noticed when I used Wizards for a little while, I think anybody who's played for 5 or more years, because now there's so many other putters, I can't say like 2 or 3 years, but now 5 or more years, I feel like you have tried a Wizard at least once. And so it's a beaded putter. It's fairly tall, pretty stable, And it's the favorite putter for a lot of people for those reasons. It feels good in the hand. And that's honestly one of Gateway's biggest selling points with it, is that it's reliable. You can find it everywhere. And there's so many, there are so many different plastics that you can use the putter in. One of my favorites, I don't know if you've tried this, Kevin, when I was using them, like I used the Voodoos for a while in the SS, and I really liked that micro bead / beadless profile. But when I was using the Wizards, I really liked the way the pure, they called it like the pure white plastic. And now they offer that pure white plastic in different colors too. So it's really funny. But the pure white plastic is a really good one. It's a little bit, I think it's a little bit firmer than like the SS, and it has like a gloss or like sleekness to it. I don't exactly know what it is, but it feels really good. It feels durable enough to putt with and throw. So that might be one to check out. But yeah, so I, in that class and session, I talked about how I use a beadless putter. I don't really, after the Wizard was one of the last beaded putters I used, because I just realized they just came out of my, beaded putters came out of my hand too inconsistently. And so like JK AVR Wizards were no more. It just wasn't working for me, but I definitely recommend it for people who are trying to find a new putter, because you'll be able to find it everywhere. Every disc golf store, that's an actual disc golf store and not just like, oh, we're an outdoor store and here's a couple racks of discs, is going to have the Wizard. And so you'll definitely be able to find it.
I think it's slept on. I think it's something that a lot of people try early on in their disc golf career and then move on from, which I did. I said, I'm picking it back up and really using it for the first time in like 4 years. Because you mess around, you want to try the different stuff. Like you said, the Voodoo, the Magic, you know, I've tried a lot. Everyone's tried a lot of different putters. I'm not that unique. As far as bead, no bead, this is my other hot take. I think that's analysis paralysis. I don't know how a millimeter, I don't even think it's a millimeter, you know, a micrometer of plastic can really affect your putt that much. But hey, if it does, it does. I respect it.
Well, you know, to be fair, I use a really shallow putter now. And so I think for me, it just feels too tall in the hand. And it may not even necessarily be the bead, but it could just be that the height of the putter is what bothers me the most. And so as someone who uses, I mean, the lubs are like 1.9, whereas like a Wizard's going to be something like 2.3, 2.4. It just feels a little bit taller in the hand. But
That's true.
I mean, I am guilty of a paralysis by analysis. I can't deny that. So
yeah,
totally like, hear you.
If you gave, let's just go with Paul McBeth, like 20 putters, 10 of them are beaded, 10 are not, you know, give him 5 mid ranges, you know, from 20 feet, he's putting them all in. Like he is not, that is not the part of his putt he's thinking about, is like how the beads coming across, you know, the superficial aspect of my index finger. Like that's just not where his brain is at. But yeah, so that's my putter of, I'm going to give it, I mean, it's working. So I can see this being a long ride. If you're listening, you've probably tried the Wizard. Get it back out. I mean, I'm telling you, like, just for the variability of the wind alone. And I think there is a trend toward really glidey putters, which can be great, but it's also sort of like ordering fast food all the time. Like, it's sometimes it's good to just get in the kitchen and freaking cook up for yourself. That's a terrible analogy, I'm sure. But, you can't just have it so easy all the time, because then when you have to go and cook, you know, because you got a date coming over,
right?
You know, now you don't know how the hell to cook in the kitchen when it really matters. You know, she's not coming back. You blew it. So I like the idea of having a putter that you really have to think about and commit to, because you're going to be more prepared to make that putt at that doubles league, at that tournament, whatever that you really need to make, like. You're ready.
Yeah. And if you guys are like me, I love whatever putter I'm using to also throw that in a premium plastic. And so, the Wizard is also a great throwing putter because of that stability. And so if you like to double up that sort of way, like some people do, you know, it is the perfect disc for something like that. You'll be able to putt with it and throw with it. And you're going to see that stability come into play. One of the cool things, it's a little gimmicky in my opinion, but one of the things I didn't know when I first was trying out the Wizards is they have the Training Wizard, which is a really cool concept. I don't know that it is great because I think it can teach some bad habits, but basically the Training Wizard, guys, is an overweighted wizard. It's like 200, 220 grams, whatever it is. And so whether it's for putting or throwing, you know, you can work on it. Theoretically, the heavier weight kind of helps you throw farther once you go to something lighter. I never had it long enough to really test that. But if you're interested in testing that, the Wizard is the only disc that I know of that comes in a heavy weight like that. So you can go ahead and check those out. But that is all that we have for today. If you guys want to go ahead and check out the putter, go to otbdiscs.com and use discount code GladiatorDG for free shipping. They have so many plastics at OTB and from Gateway in general. So you can go ahead and check out the OTB Wizard. I hope you guys learned something new about putting, about just setting everything up, painting the pole, learning to just take your mind out of it, especially on the release point. And Kevin, thank you so much for coming along and talking. We've been at this for a good bit tonight, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. Thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
Dude, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, that's all we have for you tonight. Make sure you go out this week, have some fun, play some disc golf, teach somebody new, show them the ropes, show them why we love this game. And until next time, everybody, have a great round.